Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, where it's all about making the ultimate leap from your 9 to 5 and building a business and life you love, all while doing it your way. I'm your host, Amanda Boleyn. Let's get started. Okay, you guys, we are back with another episode of She Did It Her Way podcast. And today I'm so excited to sit down with the lovely Jessica Stansberry, who helps passionate women create content that sells for them so they can grow their own business, increase their streams of passive income, and live a life on purpose by selling online courses to teach hashtag all the skills needed to do just that. She throws down booty kicking advice on her weekly podcast, Grit, on her YouTube channel and blog, and shows up every day on Instagram to make sure these women feel like they're not alone and they have every tool that they need. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm pumped to be here.
Yeah, I'm super excited because we got introduced via the Product Boss ladies. And I know a little bit about your story, but I'm really looking forward to taking this opportunity to just dive in deeper to learn more about you and how everything transpired. So tell my listeners in your own words, what is Jessica doing on a daily basis and your business? And then we'll kind of start from when you left corporate.
Yeah. So I teach online courses and just free content, honestly. So I create a lot of streams of income from affiliate marketing and sponsorship deals as well. So I kind of combine those two things and teach online entrepreneurs how to create the content, the blog posts, the podcast episodes, the YouTube videos, whatever, that actually sells for them so that they can, you know, if they need to take a week off because their kids are sick or they want to take a month vacation to Bali, they can, right? And they can still have things that sell for them. So this has become something that I am super passionate about teaching because it is the thing that caused me to have more freedom in my life and in my business, which is so, so important to me. So, you know, I make money every day because my content sells for me, and that's what I teach other people to do too.
I love it. Well, that's amazing. Let's dive in. What were you doing in corporate, and kind of walk us through the chronological progression of your journey and how you got to where you are today. And then we'll kind of dive in from there.
Sure. So, I went to college. I have a bachelor's degree in communication with a concentration in advertising, a minor in marketing. I did all the, like, you know, all the things. And then I live in a very, very, very small town. And so, and I say that and a lot of people will be like, oh, I live in a small town too. No, I live in like the smallest town. And I'm also very secluded. So I know I've told you guys this, but I live like 3 hours from an airport or 2 hours from a Target. So I know
when you said the 2 hours from Target on our last call, I go, oh, yeah. Very small. Okay.
Yes. I'm
like that. It's so funny that the perspective and the like reference point is how close you live to a Target.
Well, it's true though, because I don't think I realized how like bad that was until I got older and I realized how much I love Target. And then I was like, crap, I live really far from a Target. So because of our small town, there's probably only a handful, if that many, like 3 to 5 companies that you can work for here that actually pay well and that actually have like decent jobs and good like promotion opportunities and things like that. Mm-hmm. And one of those is essentially the power company, the phone company, our county offices, and then we have a plant here that does really well. And it's a GE aviation plant. So, that's really it. And I got a job at the phone company, right out of college. I actually worked for them part-time. So I had like landed like quote unquote the perfect job. Right. But they had nothing open in any of their departments except for customer service when I graduated college. So I went into the customer service department and hated every single minute of it. And it was the job more than anything. Like that is just not what I was meant to do. And I knew that, like I knew that from the second I started and I did it well.
And this was in what year again?
I got that job in 2008.
Nice.
Okay. So yeah. So I worked there, through the end of 2010. So it was right at 3 years. And basically I applied for promotions. I didn't get them. I was the only person in my whole, building that had a 4-year degree. And my manager would tell me because I had a degree, I wasn't smarter than her. Like she would like correct me with that. Like, oh, just because you have a degree doesn't mean you're smarter. I don't know why you're trying to tell me this. Like it was a very toxic environment. And, I basically tried to get out of it for a really long time by starting my own business. And I just didn't really know how that worked, you know, back in 2010, like online businesses were not as much of a thing as they are now. And, I had my first son, and when I had him, I was like, you know what, this is not worth it. Like the mental and emotional stress that I'm under every day to leave my baby with somebody else is just like not worth the money or the benefits. And, we could barely afford what we were doing with my job, much less like without it. But I took a leap of faith and decided to quit and, stay home with him and start my business. And I kind of started in the graphic design world is how I transitioned into the business world and went from there to blog design and web design. And it's kind of, I don't know, morphed, if you will, from that to what I do now.
Yeah, I love it. So to kind of like recap a little bit, you're saying through the end of 2010, you were at your job and then you took a leap and you were at home with your first son. And then that's when you started doing the graphic design. So you've been at this for probably, would you say like 9 years at this point?
Yeah, 9 years. Yeah.
Okay. So overnight success, right?
Yeah, buddies.
And I say that just totally because sometimes I have to remind myself, right? Sometimes we encounter people's Instagrams, we encounter their content, and we're like, oh my God, they have it all figured out, right? Mm-hmm. And it's such a good reminder to say like, no, these people have been at it for, they've been busting their butt. They've been building their business for so long. And I love that. So I would love for you to share kind of like, if you were to sum up your stages of business and your life cycle of running your business in the past 9 years, how would you describe, like, how long would those phases be? And then how would you describe them?
Oh yeah. This is really easy for me because I can like literally look at it year to year and remember exactly what everything was doing. So from that, like I quit my job at the very end of 2010. And so from that point until literally 2014, I made no money. I mean, I might have made like $10,000 a year before expenses. Like it was no money. It was basically enough to like buy groceries 1 week out of the month. And that was it. Like I made no money. I'm not exaggerating when I say that. And then in 2014, so at the time we built a house, when we both had our corporate jobs and could afford said house. And when I quit, it became that house payment, we could pay it, but then it meant that like our groceries or our, you know, extras were not maybe being afforded every month, depending on the month for me. Mm-hmm. And what happened in 2014, we actually decided to sell our house and it was a weird situation. I have a lot of weird situations in my life.
No, I love it. Share them all.
It was a very strange situation. Too. Yes. So we lived on family land and, because that's what you do in the South. And, basically my in-laws came to us and wanted to buy our house. And at first I was like, no, this is dumb. I don't want to sell my house. But then I realized that like it would, you know, it would be great for us financially, but also we had dreams of buying our own land and not always living on family land. So, we sold our house.
Can you explain exactly? I mean, I think I know what family land is.
Yeah.
I think it says it in the name, but just in case, make sure I'm not assuming anything incorrectly.
Sure. So, my in-laws owned about 80 acres.
Wow.
And they had basically deeded off like 2 acres of that for us to build our house on.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
We lived in the middle of this, like in the middle of this 80 acres, we plopped a house on it. I do not recommend. I really don't. Anytime you're like living near family, it's a hard thing. And doesn't matter whose family it is. It's just like especially we were newlyweds, we were new parents, we were very young. It was like a whole thing. And it wasn't my in-laws. It was just like the dynamic, you know?
Sure.
And so we had dreams of having our own acreage. So basically we sold our house in 2014 and bought a much, cheaper and like kind of fixer upper house on the same family land. It was actually my husband's grandmother's house before she passed away. Mm. And, when we did that, it kind of freed me up to take a step back because at this point, even though I was making no money from 2010 to 2014, I was making enough to like buy groceries or pay for my kids like $40 soccer registration fee or, you know, whatever. So I could not do it. And at this point, it kind of gave us a little financial wiggle room when we sold off that big house payment to say, okay, what should I be doing? What should I be charging? Where do I really want to go with this? And around that same time is when I found like online Facebook groups, and those were really starting to pop up, you know, at that time anyway. Like it wasn't, they weren't really prevalent before that. And so I started kind of diving into this, you know, really making a name for myself online thing. And in 2015, I started my first podcast. I tripled my income that year. So, I mean, that still isn't saying a lot because I wasn't making any before, but I did triple my income that year. And then in 2016, I transitioned out of web design and transitioned into course creation and teaching, and have just kind of rode that wave ever since. So, you know, 4 years I've been a content creator and a teacher, and I've shifted along that path as well, like on what I'm teaching or how I'm teaching it. But honestly, it's always been in the content creation path, like content and how that sells for you. It's funny because I just released a new course and I remembered that 2 or 3 years ago, I also had a group program that did the same thing as the course I'm teaching now. And I was like, oh my gosh, there was like a 50-page workbook that went with this. Let me go grab that and give it to these people as a bonus because it's the same content. It's just, it was a different name. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been on this kind of content creation path since that day, but I teach courses and do all the things.
That is amazing. Okay. Couple of things. So I want to go back into the journey. When you, in 2015, you got into online Facebook groups and you 3X your income. What was it that allowed you? Was it just simply like taking on more work? Was it increasing prices? And then how did you find clients? Because that's one of the really biggest things that my audience, like they're just beginning to start. And sometimes it can feel very daunting and overwhelming.
Sure.
And they just don't know where to start, right?
Yeah.
Well, I know so, they know what I recommend, but I'm always curious to know what others recommend.
Yeah. So I really increased my prices. So in 2013, which would have been like right before all of this happened, I think I was, you're going to gasp, like it was bad. I was charging maybe $200 for a full custom website.
Whoa.
Yes. I told you, you're going to have that reaction. It was because I didn't have like a marker, like my small town, that's what other people were charging too, but they also weren't doing them as good as I was. Like, so I didn't really know where to put myself. So then in 2014, when we sold the house and I was kind of looking at things, I'm like, okay, I'm going to increase my prices. And I went from that price. I remember it well. I went to $800 for a web design. And I remember when I booked that web design client, I bought a dishwasher for our house. And I was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, like people are going to pay $800. And then in 2015, I actually got up with industry standards and I was charging anywhere between like $3,000 and $8,000 for a full website because they were custom designed and that's what they were worth. So at that point, I raised my prices, which helped tremendously. And I was also starting to just increase my visibility online. So Periscope was a big deal then. I don't know if you remember Periscope.
Is that still around?
I think it is, but I don't think it's in our industry anymore.
Yeah.
Like I think it's just like for weird things.
I use it for a hot second and then I was like, no.
Yeah, it kind of died. Well, it died when Facebook Live became a thing. So Facebook Live killed Periscope is essentially what happened. But I was on Periscope and had built a pretty big following on Periscope and was, you know, teaching the businessy things essentially. And when I would attract the people who wanted to know about like how to market their business or how to do whatever, they would also either be the people who needed a website or know people who did. So I basically just focused on being visible online, and that allowed me to then get those first few clients at that new price, which then acted as like a snowball because then they would refer me to their friends or I was still being visible. So I would get another one come through. I started being on more podcasts and doing Facebook Lives more and, you know, all of that type of stuff. And so for me, that was kind of my key, was increasing my prices, but then also being visible so people actually knew about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. And that, and too, and it's like not giving up, and it's always sharing value and information and keep going and knowing that there's people out there that need your services.
Oh, totally.
So I wrote down like 4 different questions as you were talking that sparked in my mind. I think I kind of want to start with, so how do you know which courses or programs to launch? And can you walk us through sort of where you started with like your first course or your first coaching program, and then how has that evolved? Because I think so often in the beginning, there's a lot of things happening and it's just a matter of figuring it out, like what you want along the way. But I'm curious what that experience was for you.
Yeah. So I am of the belief that you should always listen to your audience. Mm-hmm. And some people, like I actually had someone tell me once, like, oh, well, you change directions too much. Like you're never, and I'm like, no, I'm listening to my audience. I'm not changing directions. Mm-hmm. It's all in the same like field of, you know, focus. It's just that, you know, my audience wanted to know about this thing. So I'm going to teach it because they are who's going to buy it, right? Like if I don't go for what my audience wants, I'm not going to make any money. So essentially my first course, what ended up happening is I purposefully wanted to get out of web design. I knew I wanted to make this move into course creation. And I say my first course, it was actually my second one. I released one course when I had no audience and sold zero of them. So I will say that.
No, I love that you share that because that is something that I feel like we all have that experience where we put a course out there and then it's crickets.
Yeah. And I think,
yeah,
I think so many times people think like, oh, courses are the way to go, or, you know, online programs are the way to go. But I had no audience and I don't know what made me think that somebody would buy that, but whatever. So anywho, when I decided like, oh, I really need to transition out of web design, I was getting very burnt out very quickly. I had like a stint of some really rough clients who just, you know, just did not treat me well, or I had bad experiences with. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to start going into Facebook. This is literally what I did. I went into Facebook groups and I started building relationships with the people there. And what really helped, there were a couple ways that I did that. But one, I had a podcast at the time that we accepted guests on. And so we would go in and find the leaders of these massive Facebook groups and ask them on our podcast. So we would then be, you know, be connected and be friends with these people. And so occasionally I would go in and make a post that was helpful, or I would go in and find, like I would do a search and say like, oh, what are people wanting to know about websites? What are people wanting to know about, you know, this piece or that piece? And I would go in and answer those questions, no strings attached. I would just answer them. Then these people who were running these large Facebook groups, and you have to remember, this was back when there were not that many. There were, you know, a handful of Facebook groups that were really thriving, and they would ask me to be the guest expert and things like that. And I started purposefully transitioning to, instead of, I'm not going to give away this information because then you won't hire me, I started transitioning to, I'm going to teach everything you need to know about building your own website. So that's kind of how I did that. And I launched my first course. I built up a list. So I started creating content around how you work WordPress, or should you be on WordPress or Squarespace, or, you know, all of these technical questions that people are Googling. And I created content upgrades or freebies, opt-ins, whatever you want to call them, and started growing my email list and launched my first course, which was, it's called DIY Your Website. So, that was the first course I launched, and it did really, really, really well. Which is kind of what made me say, oh my gosh, I can totally do this. Like that, I just had like a, I don't know, 5-figure launch in my first launch, and I had very few people on my email list. And so it made me realize I could do it. And from there, I relaunched that a few times and again, just started listening to my audience. They were telling me, oh, you know, how do you grow your email list? So I would, you know, I created a course about that. It eventually transitioned from like web design being my focus to me being focused on like the tech and the systems behind your business. And that's really where I found my footing. Was I created a whole suite of courses around like how to use ConvertKit, or how to use MailChimp, or how to use Trello, or, you know, all of these systems. And that was really where I found my footing and was able to finally say, okay, no more web design clients. I can actually make money doing this. And it's just kind of spurred off from there. So my audience was like, oh, how did you actually like make traction on YouTube? How is that a thing? So I created a YouTube course. And then once they take those, they have further questions. And so there's like, you know, back end offers that happen after each course. So I just listen to my audience. That's my biggest thing. And, you know, I'm not afraid at all to listen to them and say, okay, this is what you want. I can do that.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. And I love the strategy that you shared about going into other people's, like not other people's, but just going into Facebook groups and seeing how you can be helpful and using, I'm a massive fan of the search box and using that search box to find keywords that people are using in terms of like the services that you want to offer and see if people are asking questions and then simply just comment and provide value and start building those relationships from like a visibility standpoint, which is so perfect.
Yeah. And what's really cool, and I think people forget about, is I pimped out my personal profile so that like my timeline photo was definitely links to my social media and my website. Right. And where it says like where you work linked over to my business page. So even though you're in these Facebook groups and you're providing free help, people are definitely hovering over your face and being like, oh, who is this person? And then they see this big timeline photo that's like, I can help you grow your business or whatever. And they click over and then they find your business page. And it was a very, very big strategy of mine for a really long time.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I love it. And I really love how you say it's about changing directions and it's not about being all over the place. It's just offering what your audience wants. And you had mentioned too at the beginning of the show, you talked about affiliate marketing. Mm-hmm. Tell us your journey with that, because I know that that's been extremely fruitful. So when you started doing affiliate marketing, did you have the strategy or did you start to realize the strategy as you just started creating?
Yeah, it was more of a realization like on the path, because the thing with affiliate marketing, and by affiliate marketing, I use it in the way where I'm suggesting like softwares and products and tools. And so with that kind of affiliate marketing, you're making very little commission on every click or every sale that you make. Mm-hmm. So when people are sending people to Amazon, they're not making very much money if you buy something through them, right? And so I think my biggest revelation was I can make money doing this. I would start to see like a little bit here and there trickle in, right? Like $20 or $50. And I realized that it was something I could make money doing, but I was going to have more people going through those links. Mm-hmm. So in addition to, I kind of made it a two-pronged strategy. I was creating content on YouTube and on my blog and on my podcast that attracted the people I wanted to sell to as far as like selling my courses and things like that. But I was also giving them a lot of free information and then using affiliate links to direct them off to wherever I wanted them to go. So I started really doubling down on the affiliates I made the most money with, and especially affiliates where I made recurring money. So systems that you pay for monthly, a lot of them, not a lot of them, actually, you have to, it's like a diamond in the rough kind of thing. You have to find the good ones, but they will pay you recurring for someone you send to them. And so I started really like seeing the potential there and diving deep into that. So I started just creating content. The same people who want to know how to use that system are the same people who will then want to know how I use that system to grow my business. So I could sell them a course later, but right now I could also sell them into this system and make a little money with that. So I made it like a two-prong strategy where my content not only sells my stuff, but it also attracts the people who can click through to my affiliate links and allows me to make a pretty decent income from that as well.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Have you, so you have a blog, you have a YouTube channel, and you have a podcast. Are all of those strategically intertwined with each other? So for example, whatever the content is on the podcast, you have that be the content on the YouTube channel, or what's sort of the cadence that you decide for those three things?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I am not that organized, so I couldn't do that, but also there's a strategy behind it. So essentially my YouTube channel and my blog are heavy, heavy, heavy built on SEO and search. So it is very much so things that the people I will eventually sell to, whether I sell to them now or in the future, are searching for. So a lot of how-to tutorials, a lot of strategic, you know, five tips on how to do this thing or whatever. I focus very much so on SEO content on those two platforms. And then my podcast is something I use to nurture those people. Mm. So instead of it all kind of feeding off of each other, the blog and the YouTube channel or the blog and the YouTube videos do. They're basically the same content every week. But once I get them in, because that's how I'm attracting them. So they're searching for something, they find my videos, they get into my ecosystem. Once I get them on my email list or get them to follow me on Instagram or get them to subscribe on YouTube, then I tell them about my podcast. And the podcast is really how they go through that, like, know, like, and trust factor with me. And they really get to know me. And I treat it as a nurturing piece where when I'm ready to sell something, they feel ready to buy from me because they now feel like they know me.
Mm, so good. How does Instagram incorporate or integrate into the, is there a strategy with Instagram or is it just simply like, this is me?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I definitely have a strategy as far as posting on Instagram and using hashtags and trying to find, you know, new people to find me there and then sending them to my places. Right. But More than anything, I treat it very similarly to the podcast. It is a way for people, for me to nurture people and for people to build a relationship with me in return. So I do not ignore my DMs. I am constantly in my DMs. I always send like voice notes back and forth to people. I welcome people to come and DM me because that's a way for them, you know, when they search something on YouTube, I feel so far away, right? Mm. I feel like, oh, well, that's a cool YouTube video that someone helped me, you know, with in some way.
Sure.
But if you DM somebody on Instagram or they see me show up on Instagram stories with like no makeup on for the third day in a row, you start to feel like you know them and like they know you. And so that's a really, I want to be connected to my audience for one, but for two, I want them to feel connected to me. And that's a big piece of doing that too.
Yeah, that's so good. What, with that too, like, sort of being in this spotlight, social media, having an online business, share with us some of the maybe not so glamorous moments of having this online business and maybe, you know, that time when you were in the fetal position crying because something didn't work. Share some of those.
So the good thing about me is that do you know Adrienne Dorison? I don't know if
that
you know her.
Sounds really familiar.
She runs Run Like Clockwork with Mike Michalowicz.
Okay.
I don't know if that's how you say his last name, but essentially she's really awesome. But one of her quotes that I love is, "I'm not creating oxygen." And that's, I live by that. Mm. So when things go wrong, when there are tech issues, I thankfully do not have a lot of stress around that. Yes, it sucks. And I won't say it doesn't, but I also know I can't change it in the moment. Like, I can do all I can to fix it, but I can't physically go back in time and cause it not to happen, right? So things like that really don't get me. The biggest things for putting content out into the world is the negativity that comes along with that. And YouTube is like a breeding ground and a cesspool for negative people.
That's what I've heard that a lot from other friends that do YouTube, and they'll always say that the audience or the viewers on YouTube are way harsher than Instagram. So do you have any ideas to maybe what inspires that? Or
I think they're just a bunch of people sitting around in their underwear watching YouTube videos in their mom's basement is really what it comes down to. Because it's not actually the people who end up being subscribers who are mean. It's the people who are just trolling the internet looking to be a-holes that day.
Yeah, like, that's a good point.
That's all it is. And so that was really hard for me for a little while. I had someone one time tell me I needed to wear chapstick in a video. Like I guess my lips were chapped or looked chapped to them. I don't know.
Oh my goodness.
And it was like a really rude comment, like the way they phrased it. It was a guy. I'm like, seriously, you go use chapstick, dude. I don't care.
Who has that time just to say, I don't know.
Oh, totally. I've had people tell me that I need, to pluck my eyebrows.
Oh my gosh.
Just anything. If you can, they attack your physical appearance. And, I've definitely also had people like critique the quality of my content as well. So especially in the beginning, I was using, my iPhone to record and it worked great. And I still don't like, that's still what I recommend to people a lot. But then there's those people who are like, they live and breathe YouTube. And so they're like, this quality on this sucks. Well, great. You're never going to buy from me anyway. I don't care. So, I had a little like Asian woman one time tell me that I should stop wrinkling my forehead and that she was Asian and that like they don't wrinkle their foreheads and they don't get wrinkles, but I was going to have wrinkles. I mean, it was just like, it's just a very weird pool to be in. But what ended up happening is I realized that it was getting to me and, but I know it's such a big, that's not the people who actually I want to attract on YouTube. And that those aren't the people who end up subscribing or come on my email list. So it's not like I'm attracting trolls. I am in the comments, but not into my audience, if you will. Yeah. The right people are also finding my content. So it felt really not good for me to be like, oh, I'm going to just stop doing content because of the crappy comments I'm getting, because then I'm not helping the people who actually needed the help. So what ended up happening is I put a buffer between myself and my YouTube comments. So I have a girl who does my customer service. She does all of my emailing and Facebook group help and things like that. And I put her in charge of my YouTube comments. So she sees them and she answers them. If there's one she can't answer, she lets me know. But if there's any negative ones, she's going to see them before I do. And she deletes them and I never see them anymore. So yeah. I'm certain that I get more now than I ever did before, but I don't think I've seen a negative comment on YouTube in like years now. So that's it worked really well.
Yeah, no, that's such a great strategy too. And there's thinking about that too, because not only it's not about you as Jessica as, okay, I want to pretend that they're not there. It's really just more of a distraction and loss of focus for you to even see those, because then it could potentially trigger you into these thoughts. And it's like, that's not efficient, nor is it a productive use of your time. And so being strategic, which nowadays, not just with YouTube comments, but so much of content in general is really, it's about discerning what content you're going to consume and how are you going to put constraints in to maintain focus, because it is
totally
endless, right?
It really is. I mean, like almost every day I unfollow someone on Instagram or unfollow someone on Facebook, and because like we're in charge of what we see, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that so many times people are like, oh, social media is so negative, or, you know, the online world is just so, it's so hard to live in. And I agree, but you also have full control of that mouse and that finger to say like unfollow or unfriend or whatever. I mean, I'm not joking when I tell you that like 75% of my family, I don't actually follow on Facebook. We're friends, quote unquote, but they are just not in the same headspace as me and they post negative things and I don't have time for it. Mm-hmm. So being an advocate and knowing that those kind of things happen when you're running an online business, whether it's, you know, your family putting crappy stuff on Facebook or, your, you know, the people you're that are watching your content or putting it or whatever, putting some kind of like parameters around it or constraints is super impactful. Because like I say, I don't want to stop doing the content because that means I'm not now helping someone who needed my help. And so for me, it's worth it to like know I'm attracting trolls, but put in a little bit of a buffer so that I can still create content that's going to help somebody along the way.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's so great. And I know that we are kind of winding down for time because someone has, you've got to go pick up your kids, which is very important, which kind of leads into the next question.
Yeah.
And I'm sure like asking this question, I'm already judging myself because I'm going to be like, Jessica, what does a typical day look like? And I'm sure there's no typical day, but if you can give some sort of insight in creating your schedule and how do you create flow? I think that would be helpful and inspiring to hear because everybody does it so differently.
Yes. So I have to lead with this because it will make sense in a second. I thought I was an Enneagram 3, which I believe is what you are as well, right?
I'm actually a strong, I'm a 1, 3 okay. and an 8.
Okay. So you're probably more like, so we go into other numbers when we're healthy or unhealthy, which is really interesting.
No.
Enneagrams are like a whole thing. You can only really have like one number and then you can have a wing and then you can go like you can take on behaviors of other numbers when you are in stress or when you are like it's really interesting. But I thought I was a 3 and I'm not. I'm actually a 7, which makes so much sense because 7s crave freedom and flexibility massively. And that has always been something that I have craved. And I realized probably so back before I started my first podcast, I didn't even keep a calendar. Like, I would write things down, you know, if I had to do them, but I didn't like keeping a calendar because I didn't like feeling restricted by it. Mm. So when I started a podcast and had to like interview people, like I have to have a calendar, right? And it kind of happened by accident back then because I only had childcare 2 days a week. But I basically had to put all of my podcast interviews on 2 days a week. And I realized that in order to keep the freedom I need in my business and in my life, I have to be really rigid and really careful with how I allow things to get on my calendar.
Oh, okay.
So I've adapted that and adopted it and, you know, welcomed it for the last several years. And still to this day, I only take calls 2 days a week. So I only do any kind of interviews or client calls or anything on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Mm. And that way I know that on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'm kind of free to do quote unquote, whatever I want. And of course that fills up with things I need to get done for my business, but it doesn't feel restrictive. It doesn't feel like someone else was causing me to have to do it. And that's where I realized that I start to like freak out and feel claustrophobic is when everything on my calendar was because of someone else's calendar. And so I keep that in my business. So Tuesdays and Thursdays are basically call wall to wall with calls. So on Tuesdays, it's usually client calls. And then we usually book any kind of podcast interviews like this one on Thursdays. And I just prepare to do calls all day. And then Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I usually reserve one of those days each week. And it kind of depends on the week for content creation. I will batch record videos. I'll batch record podcast episodes, just whatever needs to happen. And then the other 2 days are like work in my business kind of days. So do I need to get sales pages up? Do I need to get emails written? Like what needs to happen right now at this season? But for the most part, I usually get up early and work a little bit before my kids are even up, just to get the most time out of my day. But then I really only work from about 7 to 1 because almost every day at 1, except for Tuesdays and Thursdays, I reserve those and let those go a little longer. Every day at 1, I head out to CrossFit and I do CrossFit for an hour because that's really important to me that I stay on top of that. And then I go get my kids from school and I'm in mom mode. So I don't really do a lot. Like most of my work day is in the mornings, most days of the week. And then I'm in mom mode after that. And we do like, you know, practices and games and homework and like supper and all the things. And if I need to circle back around and I have to do work at night, I will, but that is very, very rare.
Yeah. Have you ever encountered a time when you were under a construct that working more and harder is going to produce more? And if so, like what was that? And I know we're coming up on time here, but what was the big shift for you to be like, you know what, actually I can run an insanely successful business actually working less?
Yeah. And I don't think I ever had like that full realization in time. I think mine, what came after. And now that I look back, I'm like, oh my gosh, because back in 2015, when I really started to like increase my prices and get more visible, I was literally working all the time. And I'm not joking. And it finally came to the point where my husband was like, Jessica, like you have to have boundaries. Like it can't be that like you are literally working every second of every day. But I also loved what I did. So it didn't feel like that to me. But when he started to notice it is when I was like, okay, like I should probably fix this because my kids probably don't know who their mom is anymore either. So because they were home with me a lot back then. As like I say, I only had childcare 2 days a week. But I was working while they were home. So I was like sticking them in front of a TV or sticking them in front of an iPad or whatever. And now I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, I work like a third of the hours that I did back then. And I make a heck of a lot more money, you know? So I don't think there was like a realization in the moment, except for that my husband came to me and was like, okay, we got to fix this because I don't like it.
It's got to change.
Yeah. Something's got to change. Like we can't constantly like be watching a movie and you be working through the movie or, you know, whatever.
Totally.
And so I realized that I needed to make the change. And then as I made the change, I realized that my income was going up, not down. And so that's just kind of the natural now is like, I try and see how many hours I can work a week and like try and keep it as low as possible. You know, I'm like, all right, can I like make, you know, some odd $1,000 this week and work 2 hours? Let's try.
Right. No, that's amazing. And I think, and I love, just your journey and sharing, you know, you've been doing this for 9 years and it didn't start out to the way that it's ending right now. Right. But it was something that along the way, you just kept taking the next best step and then mm-hmm. making decisions based on circumstances and things that you wanted to achieve. So I do have three last questions for you. The first sure. question is, what's next? The second question is, what's your favorite book? And the third question is, where can my listeners connect with you and find you online?
Sure. So what's next? I have a lot going on. I'm releasing like a product suite, if you will, and building out a lot of funnels, just to really streamline my income even more, because I've realized that that really gives me so much freedom. It's funny because I told you about some things that we had happen this week, that I can't really say on air, but we had some like personal things happen this week. And in the midst of that, it caused our families to say, well, don't you need steady income? Or like, don't, and I'm like, guys, my income is very steady. Yeah. And I'm actually trying to like 3x it. So it's even more steady at more, you know, of an income rate. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm just working towards that and possibly opening a second business. I can't really give a lot of details there, but, mm-hmm. It's possibly coming. And then as far, what was the second question?
Your favorite book. Favorite it doesn't book. Have to be business. It could be spiritual. It could be it could be fiction.
Okay. So, I will say I actually have a lot of favorite books. I'll be honest. Like the Rachel Hollis books are some of my favorite. They just get me in a mood. And I think it's not really that I learn anything. It's more that like, she just gets me in a fired up mood and I'm like ready to go. It's kind of like Tony Robbins is for a lot of people. Mm. So I love her books, but I just recently read a business book that really changed my thinking around my business. I am someone who has never really been great at the financial part of my business. You know, I've always made do, but I've never been like strategic with like, oh, what am I investing in? Or what is this happening? And I read a book by, I don't remember his name, but it's called Tax-Free Wealth. I could probably look it up, but it's called Tax-Free Wealth. And it's by one of the advisors of the Rich Dad Company. Okay. Very, very, very good. And I'm just blanking on his name. It's not
included in the show notes.
Yeah. So, but it is so good because it really tells you like as a business owner, how you can, you know, use tax law to your advantage and tax like systems to your advantage. So instead of feeling like that dreaded, oh my gosh, I have to pay taxes. It's more like, oh my gosh, look at how much I saved and look at how much more money I'm making because of these things that I figured out. Really, really cool. And I'm not normally a financial nerd because, again, I'm just not good with that. But it was really good. So Tax-Free Wealth. And then where people can find me, my website is heyjessica.com. And I have a podcast called Grit, G-R-I-T. I always like to remember to say that when I'm on a podcast, because I know that, you know, people might be looking for another one.
Heck
but really anywhere on the internet, you can find, just search my name, Jessica Stansberry, and you will find me. So if you want to hang out with me on Instagram, it's just my name. And that's really it.
Oh, Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I so much appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed today's podcast episode, you can head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com where you can access the entire vault of She Did It Her Way podcast episodes and more information all about how to make the ultimate leap from your 9 to 5. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would be so grateful if you headed on over to iTunes and left a review letting me know what you love about the She Did It Her Way podcast. Until next time, keep doing it your way.